Confidential, Mr. President, a collection of Harry Truman's papers and diaries, Witness by Whitaker Chambers, and Tallulah Bankhead's autobiography. Buckley's book edged in at number 16 in November 1951. Not bad for a first book, written by a 26-year-old, published by what was then a nothing press. As a youth, Buckley had struck many as arrogant and obnoxious. He was not inclined to cut slack to those he deemed less intelligent than himself, and he disliked those whose politics or morality did not align with his own. Mostly homeschooled, in 1938 he was sent to a British boarding school for a year, while his mother endured a difficult pregnancy. Young Bill echoed the isolationist politics he had learned from his father and exhibited the American flag whenever he had the opportunity. His father, Buckley would later recount, dispatched every fortnight a survival package comprising a case of grapefruit and a large jar of peanut butter. Peanut butter was then and would remain Buckley's favorite food. Bill offered to share, and his schoolmates dove for the grapefruits, but one after another actually spit out the peanut butter. No wonder they needed American help to win the war, he joked. Sort of. Buckley could not make friends with only grapefruits for tender. He needed goodwill. It probably didn't help that he had no interest in sports, either. He would face similar problems in the Army, where his vocal opposition to President Franklin Roosevelt did not meet friendly ears, and where he again exhibited feelings of superiority that earned him low marks for character in officer candidate school. He once brought a training exercise to a halt so that he could pick an interesting flower. It's not that he was cavalier about his training, but why should a good soldier be impervious to botanical curiosities? Buckley never suffered fools gladly, but he did finally become a very charming and gracious man, a major, make that the major, conservative public intellectual of the post-war years and beyond. He would also become what many would consider a supreme oxymoron, a TV intellectual. More on this anon. Above all, he became a man comfortable with those whose viewpoints were very different from his own. It was his army experiences that pushed him to reconsider how he related to others. In a letter to his father, Buckley explained the transformation. When I went into the army, I learned the importance of tolerance and the importance of a sense of proportion about all matters, even in regard to religion, morality, etc. Some friends I made whom I really prized were atheistic, even immoral, but I learned, nevertheless, that regardless of the individual's dogmas, the most important thing, as far as I was concerned, was the personality. Would his friendship broaden your horizon and provide you with intellectual entertainment? I found that there were actually very few prerequisites to the good friend. He had to have a good sense of humor, a pleasant personality, and a certain number of common interests. In short, Buckley came to realize that one could have very interesting conversations and even become very good friends with people whose belief systems were very different from one's own. This kind of personal realization was not strictly necessary for a political pundit, a conservative movement organizer, an editor of a journal of opinion, or a nationally syndicated right-wing columnist. You could, theoretically, perform all of these roles from within an isolated bubble filled only with your own ideological compatriots. But a willingness to engage generously with political opponents would make you a better host of a public affairs TV show. Of course, Buckley did not need to be friends with all of his liberal and left-wing TV guests, but it would have been boring if he had simply attacked and disdained them. He succeeded on his program, Firing Line, for more than 30 years because he was open to guests, open to their differences, open to debate. Even before starting his TV show, Buckley had found opportunities for mediated debates with his ideological foes. Having been pegged as the voice of respectable, not to mention entertaining, conservatism following the celebrity of God and Man at Yale in 1951 and the founding of National Review magazine in 1955, Buckley was regularly invited to represent the right in debates at college campuses and on radio. He also appeared on TV, but he was nowhere close to being a big star. Still, even if he was not widely recognized by the culture at